This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 171. Today, I'm going to share a little more AWS news from reInvent, a bit of news from Microsoft, and then I sat down with Scott Hoag and Ben Stejink at a recent conference to talk about what they think is most important and interesting in Azure these days. Recorded live, Monday, December 12th, 2016. The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Rencore. Rencore is a market leader in the code analysis space. Founded and driven by high-profile international SharePoint and Office 365 experts, their main goal is to help any organization using Microsoft's enterprise productivity environments to work more efficiently by providing software that optimizes and secures their collaboration solutions. Rencore's most recognized product, the SharePoint Code Analysis Framework, SPCAF, is the de facto standard tool for verifying the quality, compliance, and governance of SharePoint and Office 365 customizations. If your company is using SharePoint or Office 365 and you're struggling to get your Office 365 and SharePoint customizations under control, check them out at spcaf.com to learn all the ways that SPCAF can help you. Hello, all our valued listeners. This is Andrew Connell. I'm running solo today while CJ is sitting on a beach in Mexico doing absolutely nothing but staring at the sun. It's about time that I actually held up my part of the show after he kind of held it up for me a couple times recently. But at any rate, before we kind of dive into the meat of this episode, I wanted to share a little bit of news of some stuff that's come out in the recent days. First, we recently talked a lot about some of the stuff that came from the Amazon Web Services reInvent 2016 conference in Las Vegas. It happened this past month or in November. And CJ and I shared a lot of the different things that had recently come out, like the EC2 F1 instance for doing things with the FPGAs, Greenfield, and a couple other things, X-Ray, Code Build. You remember some of the stuff that we talked about in the last episode or two. They've recently put a nice little page out that actually references a lot of the different things of new services and features that they launched at AWS reInvent 2016. And I'll make sure to have links for to this newsletter up on the notes for the show. And it lists out a lot of things. It talks about things around artificial intelligence, analytics, application services, desktop and app streaming, compute, console tools, containers, databases, developer tools, IoT, management tools, mobile, you name it. There's a lot of stuff there. So instead of listing each one of those things out, I'm just going to go ahead and reference that and let you go take a look at that if you're interested in seeing any of the stuff that's coming out from AWS that was announced at the recent reInvent conference. AWS also had some other news where they announced a new region in central Canada. This is going to join the Northern Virginia, Ohio, Oregon, Northern California, and AWS Cloud as the 6th AWS region in North America and the 15th worldwide, bringing the total number of AWS availability zones to 40 globally. The new Canada region is currently available for multiple services, including EC2, Simple Storage, so S3, Relational Database Service, RDS, and then you can also see a bunch of additional things that are there as well. I'll have a link to that in the show notes as well for you to take a look at if you're interested in looking at that for AWS. Microsoft also made some news, specifically two or three things. First, in the past week, the LinkedIn acquisition was made final, and Satya Nadella has a nice little article on the LinkedIn site where he talked about their immediate plans on what they're going to do with LinkedIn and how they're going to integrate it in with the rest of Microsoft. There was also another link that talks about the updates to filtering and sorting in the Mail, Calendar, Contacts, REST API from Microsoft. This is a little bit interesting here because they recently deployed a behavior that was a breaking change to the Microsoft Graph version 1 and Outlook V1 and V2 endpoints that are going to specifically block a class of requests that contain filter and order by for messages that result in users being prevented from accessing their mailboxes in Outlook or any other app. Microsoft does realize that this is a breaking change and it's going to impact some developers whose apps and services relied on this behavior. They say they sincerely apologize to it. It's a little disappointing when they roll out a breaking change like this on an existing API. Would have been nice if this came out in a new API instead of it going through and breaking an existing one. The main reason they're doing this is to deal with some performance issues and a bug within the API. They've gone through and they've changed some stuff up. So we'll have a link to this in the show notes that talk about what this is, why they actually introduced this. And then last but not least, Microsoft also is offering a new level of support. It's a new level of support that is going to extend support up to 16 years for a Windows Server and SQL Server, and they're calling it the Premium Assurance. So when they release a product, they have mainstream support for 5 years, which includes new features, security updates, and non-security updates. The next 5 years is called extended support, and that's just security updates and non-security updates. The new thing is premium assurance, and that goes on for another 6 years, and that's security updates and bulletins related to critical and important fixes. And they're gonna roll this out in Windows Server Premium as something called Windows Server Premium Assurance and SQL Server Premium Assurance in early 2017, which again is adding an additional 6 years beyond the current 10 years. This new level of support is going to be good for those customers who are using the products and can't actually update to a more current version than what is already out there. And they need to stay on the current versions that they're already on. The first versions of the products that will be available for Premium Assurance will be SQL Server 2008 and SQL Server 2008 R2. Their extended support is set to expire in 2019. And as far as Windows goes, it's Windows Server 2008 and 2008 R2, which their extended support is set to in January of 2020. The pricing is going to start to about 5% of the current product license costs and increase over time, going up to about 12%. Buying before the end of June 2017 means that you're going to be able to save nearly 60% on the cost of premium assurance. So just a new support offering available from Microsoft. Okay, so let's go ahead and dive into the meat of the content here. Last week, I was at the VS Live conference in Orlando. We call our specific track the Office and SharePoint Live 360 conference. We had a good number of speakers that were there. We were all focused on talking about Office 365, Office, and SharePoint for developers and IT pros. During the conference, we had a couple speakers that were there that also spent a lot of time in the Azure space. Specifically, those two people were Ben Stejink and Scott Hoag. And so what I asked them to do was that these are two guys that I know from actually the community where I live. They run a cloud user group here in Jacksonville, Florida. And what they did, I wanted to sit down with them and find out, told them, I said, hey, give me a list of a few things that are relatively new or that are things that you think are really interesting that people should know about with Azure that may not be getting as much playtime. So they sat down with me. We actually went and sat down outside, went away from the conference and sat outside by the pool to go ask them a few questions and find out what was on their mind. During this interview, you're going to hear a little bit of background noise because, again, we're outside by the pool and it was relatively not a beautiful day and it was fairly chilly. So we didn't have a lot of people that were outside by the pool. One challenge that we did have, though, is you'll hear there is a siren or two that kind of kicks off because you could hear a fire truck on the road outside. We did try and get away from that one a little bit, but just know that if you're listening to this in your car, you don't have to look around over your shoulder and see if there's a fire truck that's barreling down on you. But then again, you should still be careful in your car. You should pay attention and look all around you. And if you hear a siren, maybe pause the podcast and see if the siren is still going. Any rate, hope you love the interview. And I will see everybody next week when hopefully CJ comes back from Mexico and is ready to actually get back to work. This is Andrew, and I'm sitting here outside. You can kind of hear the background noise in the pool at the Loews Royal Pacific Hotel here in Orlando, Florida. I'm here for a conference, the SP and Office, SharePoint and Office Live 360 conference here in Orlando. Happens every year, late in the year, November, December. This year it's in December. And I've commandeered two of our speakers that are here at the conference with us, our SharePoint speakers, but we're not going to talk about SharePoint today. We're going to talk about some of their latest and greatest and stuff that's going on in Azure and what's interesting to them. So I'll let you guys introduce yourselves first. So we'll do kind of around the table, go counterclockwise. So Scott, why don't you go first?
My name is Scott Hoag. I'm an Office 365 solutions architect with Crowley Maritime based out of Jacksonville. I own all of our Office 365 Azure and desktop deployments. Basically, if it's got Microsoft in it, I kind of put out our direction and where we go with those things.
Okay, and Ben, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
I'm Ben Stejink, and I am also from Jacksonville, Florida. I actually work for myself doing consulting. Like AC said, I've been doing SharePoint, starting to do a lot more Office 365 Azure stuff, so...
That's good. That's about it. Hey, where can they find you guys? If somebody wants to catch up on you guys, you know, you got a link, got a Twitter handle, something like that you can share with us?
Yeah, so I blog at psconfig.com. And I also do a technology podcast with another office services MVP, Dan Usher, and that's over at brewery.fm.
Ben, where can they find you? Can they find what's your blog, what's your site, company name, Twitter handle, all that stuff?
I got distracted by the pool. So I also blog at benstejink.com. Twitter handle is benstejink. I'm the only Ben Stejink out there, so just go to Google and search Ben Stejink, and you'll find me.
There you go. There's a couple Andrew Connells out there. One's like a VP of like some VR company over in Britain and something down in Australia somewhere. So yeah, it's nice to be unique and be one of one, I guess. So again, you hear a little bit of background noise here. We're sitting near the pool, and you can hear a little bit of background music too. We've already had to chop the interview once here from somebody announcing a nice little some contest going on at the pool, but everything just nice outside experience here. But hey, I wanted to grab you guys because going along with the outside experience and the beautiful day, actually it's a cloudless day, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Azure cloud and find out like what's interesting to you guys. I know you guys spend a lot of time with Azure, and you guys come from a different background than me. You're not so much on the dev side like I am, so I look at things in a different way as the CJ, and it's nice to hear what everybody else is looking at, what's the new stuff, what's interesting, what's fun stuff for you going on inside of Azure these days. So, Scott, let me start with you. You gave me a list of a couple things that you thought were interesting to you. One of them you mentioned was the Dev Test Labs. Can you tell us a little bit about what this is, why should people give a damn about, you know, Dev Test Labs in Azure?
Dev Test Labs are awesome, right? So I should preface this. I'm not a developer. Like, I don't open Visual Studio. That's not my job. I do a lot of IaaS, a lot of identity, things like that, PaaS services. I still get value out of Dev Test Labs. So Dev Test Labs is a zero-cost service in Azure. It's effectively a container around your other services. So we have concepts of things like resource groups. So this kinds of adds a superset of functionality on top of something like a resource group. So Dev Test Labs let you spin up VMs based on images that you've created or gallery images. So you can actually stamp like a gold stamp for an image and go out and give that to a group of developers, let them run it through inside a lab. Everything gets created inside its own VNet, its own resource group. You can control costing. There's automated policies for things like auto start and auto shutdown. So recently auto shutdown came to IaaS VMs. That's actually an offering that started out in DevTest. So DevTest today has both auto start and auto shutdown. They recently released the capability to spin up ARM templates from within your DevTest lab. So in the past, you would have to go in, you would have primarily virtual machines. So you would have a virtual machine and then a set of artifacts that get deployed onto that machine. So an artifact could be a COTS program, like say you need like WinZip on that VM, you could go ahead and deploy that out automatically, again, as part of that Dev Test Lab offering, or you could deploy your own custom application. So if you had a Windows service, you had a website you wanted to spin up, something like that on top of a VM, you could deploy all that out of GitHub on the go.
All right, just for the listeners here, we stopped for a second because just so you know, that was not, if you're listening to this in your car, that was not a fire truck coming in behind you. That was a fire truck somewhere around us. So I'm sorry, continue.
So along with these artifacts, you can also do things like deploy ARM templates out of GitHub now. So you can use VSTS repos or GitHub, public or private repos. You can just go in with an access token. As long as you have your Azure deploy.json and you have your kind of parameter files and everything set up, kind of that standard methodology that we've been using for ARM for a while now, you can actually just point at a directory in a GitHub repo, and Microsoft will go ahead and clone that in as part of the service and maintain a cache of it. And then you can spin up ARM templates inside of your Dev Test Labs as well. So now it's not even, I've seen a couple instances where folks will go out and they'll say, hey, we've stamped an environment and you know it's got three VMs. So maybe it's got a domain controller and a SQL server and a web server, right? Kind of your typical SharePoint farm kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So usually you've got to go to somebody either on like the DevOps or the operations side to spin that up for you. Like, hey, go do this with these parameters for me, or you're giving people kind of point and click access. So in a Dev Test Lab, if you stamp it out far enough, you can actually just go in and kind of do a one click deploy. And now you've stamped out that resource where it's controlled. You can give other people access to it a lot easier. You control the costing around it, pick up all the policies. If you want to redeploy or you want to stamp an image out of there, so I've gone ahead and I've done my deploy and I really like the way that thing turned out and I want to build it for the next person, go ahead and stamp it and just put it in your ARM template and spin it over to the next person. So it's all great because you're not paying anything for the service.
Yeah.
You're only paying for all the other underlying services behind it. So
just the resources that you're consuming.
You've just abstracted everything away. So why not give it a shot? You know, if you live in that world, it's not a bad place to be.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a cool that's a cool capability of Azure. Ben, you mentioned FPGAs. I know CJ and I have talked a little bit about it on the show, but I'm curious to get your take on it and what you think about FPGAs.
The FPGAs piqued my interest. My degree is in computer engineering, so we played with FPGAs when I was in college. So seeing those come to Azure, it interested me to see what they were doing, especially when they announced they were also using them to speed up the networking. And I know we'll get into that a little bit more later, but just some of the stuff with FPGAs, some of the demos were just impressive. I don't know if you guys talked about them much or what you guys have done, but how they can take FPGAs and far surpass the performance they were able to achieve with CPUs, with GPUs. Some of those demos for Ignite where they were able to take some of those books. I mean, translating 1,400 pages in 2.5 seconds with just, I think it was like 4 FPGAs and a couple CPUs.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's absolutely nuts. And just some of the potential with it. I was actually talking with somebody the other day about even where AI might go and what you could do with FPGAs and with how quick it's getting. I mean, they even talked where they could, if they took all their FPGAs deployed, they have them all over the cloud right now, all connected. So it's a, I think they call it like one of the largest hyperscale networks of FPGAs. And if they took everything they have deployed, they could translate the entire Wikipedia library or the English version of Wikipedia in less time than it takes to blink.
Yeah, it's like something like it takes 2.2 seconds to blink, but they can get it all done in like a tenth of a second. So
yeah, it's nuts. And this other guy and I were talking about how even taking something like that, if it can process Wikipedia that fast, how long before you could actually let AI write blog posts? Because it has that ability to go out and process all of that content so fast and actually compile it into something that you could go out and read and consume about all the information around a specific topic.
Yeah.
And just the massive compute scale, especially being a hardware guy, that is achievable using those FPGAs.
Yeah, it's nuts what they do. It's amazing what the level up is. I mean, you see, you know, new CPUs come out. Intel has a second, third, fourth, fifth. I think we're on the seventh or eighth generation now of the CPUs that come out. But it's always incrementally faster. You don't really see something that really, really levels up. I mean, battery performance gets better and that kind of stuff. But seeing something like an FPGA and see what the impact that can have. When I did some of the Express Route stuff just recently, the Azure guy was talking about how they were going to use it for the networking and how much of an impact it's going to have. Before we talk to you a little bit about some of the network improvements, though, I want to have a quick word from one of our sponsors, give them a chance to sit there and share what they're doing with our listeners.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by ShareGate. ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 365 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check them out on ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Okay, so one of the things you just talked about, Ben, was about the FPGAs. I want to continue with some of the network performance stuff that they're going to be able to give us here. I know you spent a little bit of time playing around with some of the network performance improvements that Microsoft has added to Azure. This is one of the things you want to talk about, so share your wisdom with us on this.
All right, so one of the things, especially being an IaaS guy working with SharePoint, we all know how much traffic SharePoint can send over the network. Between your SQL servers, your web front ends. Essentially what they did with the FPGAs is normally the network traffic in Azure goes over a normal network. It goes through Hyper-V. It goes through kind of that software networking layer. Mm-hmm. What they are able to do with these FPGAs is they actually tie the FPGA directly into the PCI Express on the physical hardware and do all the network programming on the FPGA itself. So now instead of all that network traffic going through the software, it's going from the network to the FPGA directly onto the PCI bus that then talks to these virtual machines. which has caused them to be able to speed up networking drastically. They're going up to potentially 25 gigabits per second on a network, 10x reduction in latency down to like somewhere in the 20 to 50 microsecond range.
What were we seeing for like the amount of like bandwidth that was going before that? You say up to like 25 gigs. You know, offhand, do you know by chance? I know I'm sandbagging you on this one. So if you don't know, that's okay. But what was the kind of like throughput we were seeing prior to this?
That one, I honestly have no idea.
That's fine.
Yeah, I haven't looked. I can do some research and we can put it in the show notes if you want.
Sure. Like that'd be great.
Yeah, but I'd be curious to do a comparison because I actually went in the other day. So the one disadvantage right now with this new accelerated networking, it's still in preview. So it's only available in limited regions. There's only two regions it's available in. And it's only available if you spin up a DS15 VM.
Either so small, right?
Yeah, just a tiny little one. I think it only has 20 cores and like 140 gigs of RAM.
That was a joke on the small VM.
$300 a minute.
Get the MX out.
Yeah, I only spun it up for like as long as it took me to run a quick test, and then I shut it down before I couldn't buy any Christmas presents for my family. But I spun one of these up. I got accepted into the accelerated networking preview, and just for the heck of it, went out to MSDN, downloaded a 5.5 gig ISO, mm-hmm. and spun up two of those DS15 machines and copied the file between them. So I copied a 5.5 gig file from one VM to the other in right around 4 seconds.
Holy moly, that's an improvement.
Yeah, I actually had to take a video of it to catch how quick it was going, because the transfer speed between the two VMs was 1.5 gigabytes per second. And it actually copied the file before Windows Explorer could calculate how much time was remaining on the file copy.
That's a good problem to have.
It was awesome. And then I went through and I made a copy of a whole bunch of these and created one massive file. And again, I know a big file will obviously transfer a lot faster than a whole bunch of small ones, but one big file, I think it was like 120 gigabytes. It was right in that range, copied in like 1.5 minutes between my two VMs.
Yeah. At that point, the disk is your gate, right? For the IO.
Yeah.
So you said that's going to manifest itself kind of like other networking improvements have. So it'll be gated to machine sizes, or at least it is today. So like today, I can go in a smaller series. I can get, you know, kind of the 1 gig, just it's my cheap software link in. If I upgrade to a larger machine, I can get on to a 10 gig Ethernet link. And now these will go up to 25.
Yep, that's kind of the idea. Right now, they don't charge anything for the preview. It kind of has yet to be seen how far down they'll go, if they'll bring these all the way down to like the DS1s, or if it'll stay kind of as a premium feature on some of those bigger machines.
Mm.
We'll just kind of have to wait and see.
Yeah.
I mean, usually you've seen network gated like that, right? So
right.
Things like gateways on your VNets, right? So they used to be kind of just what they were for throughput. And then all of a sudden they came and said, hey, you can pay for a larger throughput gateway. Mm. All you were ever doing was paying for those RAS servers that sat behind it, right? So gateways are just VMs running in the background. So we give you a bigger VM, you can have more bandwidth. So,
yeah.
You know, it kind of keeps with that story, right? More compute, more RAM, we can do more things for you. You'll just pay for it.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that right now it's only in front of VMs. I'm hoping maybe we'll see this in front of even some of the other services, storage services, the Azure SQL databases. If they start putting FPGAs in front of that, maybe even seeing higher bandwidth between an on-prem environment and something up in the cloud, utilizing these FPGAs, or even between services. Right now, I know on VMs, you're limited with your hard drive throughput. I think a lot of that still goes over a network. If they'll start putting FPGAs between some of that stuff to speed up disk IO on VMs and Azure, or again, communication with SQL databases, Azure SQL databases.
Yeah, it's a big thing to be able to take away the stuff that's all like, it's all architected, all designed in software and being handled by software. By moving it over to FPGAs, not only are those specific tasks going to be getting a hell of a lot faster, but it's also taking a significant load off of the CPUs on those machines as well. So same concept we had when we switched over to doing more work from CPUs to GPUs for like machine learning and analytics and stuff like that. We're getting that same benefit, but it's a much more kind of general purpose thing that we can do that's general purpose, but specialized to the actual task at hand. Like it's a pretty cool It's going to be really cool to see where Microsoft goes with these things, with FPGAs and what they can do with this advanced networking. Maybe we'll start to see Microsoft, the network speeds, be a little bit more on par with like the like GCP's get a significantly higher performance with their network than Microsoft does on. I know that with a lot of the smaller files, but I know that's one place where GCP is definitely excelling over Azure. But
well, you're starting to see this stuff manifest itself, not just through like GCP, but AWS announced their right. FPGAs the other day. So it's not that everybody's not working on the same things. It's yeah. kind of how they're coming about it, right? Yeah. So Microsoft's, you know, if you're just on the IT pro side, this is nice, right? Go ahead, spin it up. They'll do everything for you. There's really nothing for you programmatically to worry about. It's still software-defined networking and throwing up your machines and everything else. It's just, hey, we're going to give you this nice value add on the back end.
Yep.
Whereas AWS has kind of come and said, well, hey, here's going to be the API and here's how you're going to get at it. And GCP is always all over the place.
Yeah,
yeah,
very true.
It could be different tomorrow. You know.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Well, cool. Scott, you have one that you want to talk about. Azure Identity Protection. I don't know anything about this. I'm really curious what you have to say about this.
So Identity Protection is one of the new services. You know, like if you're an Office 365 subscriber and you're leveraging Azure Active Directory, which everybody does on the back end, right? It's always good to take a little bit of time and think about spending the extra money for Azure AD Premium and some of the services that come with it. So particularly if you're an EMS subscriber, Enterprise Mobility Suite, or you just go out and get those Azure AD Premium P1s or P2s. If you end up in the P2 range, Azure, or you're an EMS subscriber, Identity Protection is a new service that lets you do risk-based assessments of your identities in real time and apply conditional policies to them. So for folks who are used to having like a conditional access policy on a mobile application, right? You must be on this network, or you got to be on our VPN, or you know, you have to have this type of device, whatever it is. You can start to do the same things with your user accounts. So you can create policies based on risk profiles, and you can assign them severities, kind of high, medium, low. And you can say, hey, we're sitting here down here at this conference and we're on public hotel Wi-Fi and we really don't know like where that comes out on the internet or what it does. So maybe we hop on a VPN and your VPN is someplace up the East Coast, New York City, right?
Right.
So, you know, everybody does this. Like Google will take a look at your account and say, oh my gosh, you're signed in from two places at once. So this is effectively that same service inside of Azure AD, but you can take it a step further. So where like services like Google or like consumer services, they just shut everything down. What this lets you do is it lets you say, so I have a risk-based event for, I've seen this user sign in from two different locations within 5 minutes of each other. Mm-hmm. So I want to rank that a medium severity. And the next time that user goes to sign in, I want them to use MFA when they sign in. But I only want them to use MFA when they sign in for their next sign-in attempt.
That's cool. So it's conditional.
It's totally conditional. So you control kind of the policies and what's going on. You're leveraging the heuristics that Microsoft has from those other couple hundred million of accounts in Azure AD. So they're building risk assessments based on all that. So they build out some automated profiles. You'll get things like weekly emails, like here's your risk assessment, right? You had this many accounts that we think look like, you know, they were signing in from all sorts of weird places. These are ones that we flagged and we think might be hacked. So you might want to go take a look at those. Do you want to create a policy? Because we see this, you know, we see that you have 40 users a week who have this one thing. Let's go ahead and be proactive and start to shut things down at the edge.
I see.
So it kind of lets you have your cake and eat it too, right? You can either do the monitoring thing. It's just a pure Azure monitoring service, or you can be a little bit more hands-on and say, yep, when this happens, I want this other thing to happen, and then maybe I want these other two things to happen as well. And then you get all the reporting and everything built around that, right? So you can change it over time. It's just editing a policy and throwing it out there. So does require Azure AD Premium, but if you're kind of in that SKU set or you're a subscriber of those services, go ahead and turn it on. If anything, even if you don't use the policies, you can just spin it up and you'll get that automated report every week. So you can start to evaluate those things and see where they sit within your environment.
Do you know if this is the same thing that Office 365 is using for some of the conditional access policies and stuff like that? Or, I mean, you know, if it's related to it or anything?
So conditional access policies in Office 365 tend to be related to Intune, right? They're kind of like the MDM Lite services.
Yeah.
So as far as I know, identity protection isn't part of Intune. It's just kind of built on data in your Azure AD. It's not tied to really a device side of things. It's really more around your user accounts and what's going on with those. But you can use it in conjunction with all that, right? There's nothing to say that identity is on this side and then applications are on this side. So you can definitely go down that path and kind of tie it all together.
I see. That makes sense. That makes sense. Hey, before we jump back to Ben, let's do another word from one of our sponsors.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. Are you interested in all things happening in Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, BI, SharePoint, or .NET? Look them up on Valid.nl.
Okay, Ben. You've got another one that you want to share with us here. You said auto shutdown VMs. And I heard Scott say something about auto shutdown VMs in dev test. Is this different?
So this is the same thing. They actually took the auto shutdown that was in dev test and promoted it now. So it's available for all of your VMs in any Azure subscription.
Okay, so it was available in dev test. What this is recently, they promoted that and say now anybody can use that, any VM can use that, not just one that's part of dev test.
Exactly. So I saw it show up maybe a week ago or so from when we're recording this, and I jumped right on it. I have 3 kids at home. I work from home. Inevitably, I'm working on some environment up in Azure. I'm in my VMs. I lose track of time. My wife is like, hey, it's time for dinner, and I run out. I leave all my VMs on, and I have kids at home. I don't get back to them until after they're in bed, like 4 hours later.
Yeah.
So I'd end up racking up dollars because my VMs would run until I could get back to them a few hours later. Now I have all my VMs set to shut down between 6 and 6:15 p.m. every night. Mm-hmm. So I don't even worry about it anymore. I just work up until it's time to go have dinner, leave, whatever. All my VMs shut down a few minutes later. So it's been really cool to just be able to go in. It's really easy to turn on. If you go look at all your VM settings now, you'll see the auto shutdown right there. You click on it, you turn it on, you set what time you want it to shut down. If you want to be alerted before it shuts down, there's a REST endpoint you can publish it to, set how far before it shuts down you want to be alerted. I'm not a developer, so I don't know what to do a whole lot with the REST endpoint. So yes. I'll let...
This is where you can turn the interviewee into the interviewer.
Exactly.
AC was talking about some cool scenarios earlier, right? So, she talked about it, right? You had a little bit with Slack, and because it's all webhook driven.
Yeah, it's all webhook. So the REST API you're talking about is webhook driven. And I know someone who took that experience and said, 15 minutes before you're going to shut down the VM, you notify, tell Azure to notify me when that 15 minutes is going to happen. Or, sorry, 15 minutes before you're going to do that shutdown event. What you're giving them is you're giving them a URL, which is a webhook. So they're just going to simply post and say, hey, we're shutting down a VM. That's for 15 minutes, they're shutting down a VM or something like that. And you get a tiny little payload. So a really quick little hit that you get. You built a little Azure function. That Azure function was set up to go publish to Slack. That when he published it to Slack, it was just a little message saying that this virtual machine is going to be shut down in the next 15 minutes or within 15 minutes. And what they did is then you can, in Slack, you can do little, thumbs up, thumbs down, or different icons or whatever, reactions, I guess they call it, to different messages that come up. So what they did is they actually set it up to where you have, in Slack, you have these default icons, which are numbers or thumbs up or thumbs down. And if you would do a thumbs down, then it would disable the fact that it was going to actually shut down the VM. It would actually go in and say, no, disable that auto shutdown so it won't, nothing will happen. So when that would happen in Slack, that would call out, that would set up to go do a response back to an Azure function. That Azure function would then go back and use the Azure REST API, the ARM REST API, to go say, don't shut it down, disable that whole thing. And then it would set it up on a timer and then re-add the thing down to, like, say, the next day or 2 days later when it's like, I want to be able to shut it down tomorrow, but not today. Same thing to say, I just want to snooze it. So if they put a number in there of, like, say, 1, it would snooze it for an hour. Or if they put a 2 in there as a response, it would snooze it for an hour. And all that stuff was managed using, like, chat ops through Slack to be able to communicate with Azure when Azure's telling you, hey, we're going to shut down. No, don't shut me down. Or let it keep going. A lot easier than going to log into the portal and find your machine and then say, no, don't do it. And if you're in the middle of something or middle of a call, it's kind of, hard to go through all those tasks or all those steps and everything to keep that from happening when really you could just have it up in Slack and you're in the middle of a call and just be like, nope, don't do it. Right.
Yeah. One of the downsides to the way it is today is it's not policy driven, right? It's VM by VM. So like in dev test labs, it's policy driven to say everything within this resource group in this lab It's going to go up and down at the same time, so you can manage it at that level. So this time, you know, you have that ARM template, you spin up four or five things. If you don't adapt your template to configure that for you, you're going to be going and clicking around in the portal a little bit, right? Or playing around with PowerShell or REST API or something to go and set it on this one, set it on this one, set it on this one. Make sure I did it right across, you know, all three or four of those. And then let me go back and do that in every other resource group and every other deployment I have. So, you know, it's definitely one of those kind of things you got to watch out for, because you do it on one and you're like, oh, that's cool. And then you come back later and you left three other VMs running for, you know, with your FS15 for...
Yeah, you're playing with the big VMs, yeah. the high performance networking and everything. So those nice big NVIDIA machines. All right, cool. So yeah, we got another feature there, auto shutdown of VMs. Well, Scott, you had one more thing that you wanted to share with our listeners, and I'll be honest, I have no idea what this is. I don't even know what it stands for. MAM without enrollment. What is MAM without enrollment?
So kind of in the same vein as identity protection, this is another Azure AD premium or EMS feature. It actually piggybacks off Intune. So if you think about Intune as MDM solutioning, right? So it's mobile device management. MAM or MAM is mobile application management. So if you want to be really intrusive with your users, you would say, hey, go ahead, do the BYOD thing, but register your device with me. So if you leave the company, I want to be able to wipe your device. Mm-hmm. And that requires them enrolling. You got to set up some certificates. There's always some other infrastructure, right? Whether it's Intune or you go with BombGuard or somebody else. There's always something, AirWatch. There's something else to do. So MAM without enrollment skips all that. It says, okay, I've got this little piece of Intune that I want to carve out. You actually don't even get to it through the Intune portal. You get to it through the Azure portal. They've got blades for it in there. And you can go in and basically you define policies for applications. So you select a device type. So a device type can be a Windows 10 device, it can be Android, or it can be iOS. And then within that device type, you create policies around applications. So for all the applications that Microsoft publishes, this mobile first, cloud first world that they're in, things like the Office suite. So you've got Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, Yammer, all these different kinds of things. You can lock down just those applications without touching the rest of the user's device. So you can create a policy that says, okay, all my iOS users, I want to make sure that they're on non-jailbroken devices, and I want them, when they sign into any of my Microsoft apps that are tied into their Microsoft licensing, I want to make sure that they always use a PIN or Touch ID to get in. And here's the PIN length I want and what that is. So you kind of just go through the portal, check, check, check. Here's all the apps I want this to apply to. Next time the user signs in, when the app comes up, it'll say, hey, I'm managed by your company now. It'll close, reopen, and then that policy's in effect. So effectively what you can do is I can go to, like within my organization, I can go to my users and say, hey, rather than taking and pulling your email down with like an active sync profile, I want you all to only access your email through Outlook on iOS. And then rather than having to worry about controlling your device, I'll control the application and the data in there. So go ahead and have fun and do all your other stuff. But then I can pick and choose and be as restrictive or as open as I want to be. So you can do things kind of like you can with the access policies from Intune, where you can come and say, you know, if I'm copying data out of a Word document, I only want to be able to let my users paste that data into other managed apps. So they can't go ahead and take it out of like a Word document and just put it into like iOS notes or something like that, or over into the regular email. But they could definitely go into Outlook and grab it and copy and paste and do whatever they wanted to that way.
That's cool.
It's awesome because it's way less intrusive, right? There's less overhead on the back end to manage it. And for your users, it's pretty much just app by app, let's come in and manage it out that way. And then you can create different policies that affect different groups, and you can build them out off Azure AD security groups. So if you're a premium subscriber, you can do like the dynamic security group thing, and you know, you can just kind of go sky's the limit with it and all over the place.
Do you guys, with features like this, that sounds really cool. I mean, with features like this, do you ever wonder like how these things kind of come about in the sense of, you know, how does somebody get the idea that we need to build this out? I mean, probably, maybe there's something internally at Microsoft, but I can't think of a lot of the features I'm seeing, like specifically like for this thing that you're about MAM without enrollment. With this, I'm looking at it and saying, I never would have thought of this kind of a solution for my organization. But now that I hear it described, I'm like, oh, I could totally see why this would apply and how useful this would be. You ever wonder how they come up with this stuff?
You know, I think a lot of it's driven out of, like, we want people to consume these services and we want them to be easier to consume, right?
Yeah.
So you have to pay more money for Azure AD Premium. So we want to make it as easy as we can to onboard you into that service. Mm. So if I can, like, literally, if we went out and spun up a new tenant, 5 minutes later, we could have NAM without enrollment up and running, and we could have it across all our mobile devices, locked down to not just the device, but the user, right? So again, now we're at the user level. So I don't manage devices, I manage applications and I manage users. It's just a different way of thinking about it and approaching it, but it makes it just super simple and kind of super slick to get in there. There are some downsides. So you kind of tagged onto something that it's application by application. So if you go into like Android has more applications that are manageable than iOS today, or you're often waiting for a product group to come up. So like when they initially rolled this out, Yammer wasn't there. And now you're starting to see announcements. So like Yammer's in demand without enrollment, Power BI is in there. So as the mobile apps come in and as the application teams catch up, they start to roll that functionality. It's got upsides and downsides, right? So you've got to manage that. You've got to know which applications come in. You've got to know which applications manage which features. Like when they first roll this stuff out, usually whatever the app team is, for some reason, every time you know I open a support ticket, it's always like they're just using some generic Intune library and they don't implement it right.
Yeah.
So you'll have like a 6-digit PIN policy and you'll go to sign into the app and the app will only support a 4-digit PIN because that's the way that that team wrote the app, right? So you tend to wait for it to catch up and keep up with it. But eventually it does. And the onboarding is so simple that when they do add a new app, you just go in later, you go into a portal, you just open up a blade and check a button and click save, and you're off and running to the next thing.
Ah, that's pretty cool. That's very cool. Well, okay, so before we wrap this up, we usually do something on our show about where CJ and I do picks, but I want to ask you guys something a little bit different now. Ben, I'm going to start with you. If you had some time to go play with any tech that's out there right now, something that's, you had your eye on, you're like, something fun, something work-related, whatever, what would you like to just sit there and say, I'd like to carve out like 2 or 3 days and just go play with this tech and just kind of learn a little bit more about it? I was putting you on the spot there. I know. I mean, there's a whole thing here. You can go second if you want to try and go second, unless Scott's got one.
You want to go second?
I'll go second.
All right.
You go ahead.
You got one?
One?
Go for it. Okay. Scott's going to go first.
So I really want to get into the Lego Mindstorm stuff. So I in a past life, I used to be a developer, so I think I could like sling some of that stuff together if I really had to sit down and do it. But I think it'd be super cool to like build something out with the kids and sit down and say like, all right, we're going to program this thing to go from here to here now. So we actually, those little Sphero, they had like the BB-8 model.
Yep.
So, you download your Disney app and you control that thing with Bluetooth.
Yeah.
There's actually apps where you can graphically create like paths for BB-8. So you can actually go ahead and program him out, change his colors, and make him do things. So we've sat down with the kids and done that. And that's all been super fun, right? So Legos are even better than just like Bluetooth crap toy rolling around on the floor.
Hey, I got a BB-8. I got to go find that app so we program like a little path there. I didn't know I could do that.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll send you a link to it or we'll put it in the notes. But yeah, you can totally go through and just drag and drop puzzle pieces. Go forward
cool.
Two steps, take a left, turn red, make some noise. That kind
cool.
of thing.
That's cool. Yeah, Mindstorm is cool. I have a first generation Mindstorm. That stuff's really cool. The way you were building it out was a little kludgy and kind of cumbersome, but I know they've done a much better job making it a little bit easier to work with now. So yeah, easier with the kids too. I mean, my kids love that stuff. Yeah. Cool. How about you, Ben?
So I also have a Mindstorm, but my kids aren't old enough yet. So I'm hoping that they'll...
Said I was doing it for the kids.
It's really for you. Okay. So one of mine that I've been interested in for a long time and just haven't had the time or, frankly, the money to do it is just the whole home automation.
Yeah.
I picked up some smart LED bulbs the other day, had some issues with them, so ended up having to return them, but those were really cool. Picked up an Amazon Dot the other day and was just looking at all the different integration you can do between Amazon Dot, between light bulbs, between deadbolts for your front door, garage door openers. It really intrigues me. I would love to have the whole house connected and just be able to look at everything, control everything. Frankly, my wife would probably kill me if I got the whole house automated. She's not nearly as technical as I am, but it's really cool to me is looking at just what's become possible lately with connected houses, smart homes, that type of stuff.
Wow, very cool. It's funny you say that because as we're sitting here talking about the non-technical wife, I'm getting texts from my wife about the GFI has been blown in our garage and now she can't open the garage to get the car out and now she's stuck with the car. So thankfully, without even responding, it resolved itself. I'm not really sure how that happened with the GFI. It kind of scares the hell out of me and I got to get home quick. It's funny you say that. Yeah, there's a guy here that would show me, I can't remember which one it was, but he would show me one where he almost, it very much felt like you were using almost like an IFT or like a flow kind of a model to build like these little workflows on your phone and be able to publish them to the devices that he had. So he was showing me one that with his like Nest Cam, if it detected movement to turn the lights on, but only do it if it was a certain time of night. Don't do it like in the other times of night or something like that. And also take a picture or whatever and also be smart enough to know if like, you know, is this a deer or is this a person or, you know, something like that. So
There's an app called Stringify.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think that's what he was using.
It's, you're just building out mobile flows, but kind of the scenario driven thing. So tie into services and devices and push them across.
It's really cool what you can do with this stuff. I want to do some of that stuff with my fish tank to be able to control some things, especially to be able to have a camera to be able to monitor it after almost a very scary incident this past week where I almost lost the whole tank. So
yeah, I saw one even on IF, just using that word. If you have it on your phone, it actually knows where you are with a GPS location. So you get some of these smart light bulbs. You can set it up just using IFT. So once you pull in your driveway or get in your neighborhood, it turns on the lights in the house for you. So you're not walking into a dark house.
Yeah, that's cool.
Especially when I'm out of town, wife's at home, for her to be able to come home and just have the lights be on.
Yeah.
Some of that type of stuff, just really simple, but really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. I mean, and having those kind of capabilities, being able to like tie it into, like, say, with an Amazon Echo or an Amazon Dot and be able to talk to that and have that go call some of these, kick off some of these workflows. It's really cool we could be able to do. It's almost like you said, it's a little bit on the scary side, seeing all these connected devices. And I don't know, maybe like a distributed denial of service attack with some webcams a couple weeks ago. Seeing those kinds of things being able to pop up now.
It only took out level 3. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was working on GitHub that day and it took out GitHub and Twitter.
It was a really pretty outage map though, the whole East Coast.
And then a hot map over in the West. Yeah, everybody in the middle was fine. Cool. Well, hey, Scott, Ben, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to sit down with us and talk to us a little bit about some of the cool things that are going on Azure these days.
Oh, thank you.
Now, where can they find you guys? We talked about it at the beginning, but Scott, where can they find you online?
So I get the blog at psconfig, the podcast at brewery.fm, and I'm at Twitter as Ciphertext, CIPHERTXT.
Cool. Ben?
Yep, and I'm benstedjink.com. Twitter, Ben Stedjink too. Again, thanks for having us. I got told today by, I think it was Paul Schaeflein, said I'm an elite company now since I've been on here twice. I don't know. You guys define for yourself what elite company is.
You, Mark Anderson, and Paul Schaeflein. You guys are, yeah. There's a couple other people have been on multiple times. I think Andrew Liu from Microsoft and DocumentDB. And now I really shouldn't have just started dropping names. I know I'm going to start forgetting everybody right now. The newest member of the club. How's that?
Thanks. Cool. Glad to be in the club.
Cool. Your mug is coming. Cool. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you like this episode? Send us a tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Air by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.